We begin with a city and a nation dominating the headlines. That's the famous theme from the Great Gates of Kiev from Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition Orchestral Suite. Central Kiev is shrouded in a haze of smoke today. And the songs depicting the people of Kiev and Ukraine are not being written by Russian composers. It is homegrown Ukrainian voices like pop singer Ruslana.
You make me angry. You drive me crazy.
On the barricades herself earlier this week, Ruslana declared to crowds of protesters, "Europe, stop promising, start acting. Europe in Ukraine is being killed before your eyes. Democratic Ukraine and people who choose European values are being destroyed before your eyes. Authorities," she shouted, "come to your senses. Europe and the world, notice us. Notice Ukraine in the center of Europe." Well, President Obama claimed this week that the U.S. is paying attention to what's going on in Kiev.
"We'll be monitoring very carefully the situation, recognizing that along with our European partners and the international community, there will be consequences if people step over the line."
But amidst the worst violence of the last few weeks, Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych fired the head of the armed forces and announced something of a truce yesterday. The current unrest and drama in Kiev is hardly the first time this city has been at the center of turmoil in Europe. Marta Dichok is a professor of history and international politics at the University of Western Ontario and author of The Grand Alliance and Ukrainian Refugees. She joins us from Toronto. Professor, welcome.
Good morning.
So looking at what's going on in Kiev right now, it reminds me of the historical treasures that were overrun and destroyed in Bosnia, in Damascus, certainly within the last 2 years. What are your feelings watching what's unfolding in Kiev?
As I saw the smoke rising and the fires burning in Kiev Central Square, I thought, am I watching World War II, or is this reality live streamed from Kiev via the internet? It's the first time that there's been this sort of violence since World War II, and shocking is just the word that comes to mind. It seems so inadequate.
I can hear just the emotional sort of tension in your voice. Describe for us the extent to which Kiev has been really at the center of change in Europe going back hundreds of years.
Kiev is an ancient, ancient capital that was the center of civilization in the 9th century before Moscow was even a city. The children of the princes of Kiev were married to France, to other European capitals. It's been at the center of power struggles throughout its history. The Mongols invaded it in 1240. Throughout history, people have been trying to take over the city, conquer it. In the First World War, when Ukraine tried to declare independence, the Bolsheviks came and took over. The Second World War, again, the German and the Soviet armies were battling over Kyiv, bombing it. It's so distressing to see that it's happening from the inside now.
And Russian literary figures, poets and novelists, describe Kiev with such fondness and affection, yet that affection seems to be lost in the turmoil that's going on today. Do you think that the love between Ukraine and Russia is gone now, is something completely of the past?
Well, I wouldn't put it that way. I think Ukrainians and Russians and Poles and Lithuanians and Georgians, they all live together. They're neighbors. There's a lot of intermarriage. The issue here is what's happening and what sort of future Ukraine is choosing for itself. And there are a lot of Ukrainians in Kyiv throughout the country that have been saying, we are European. We want to live in a normal country. And unfortunately, there are others who are behaving in a way that's barbaric. And that's what the violence is all about. It's a clash of values.
In many ways, you come directly out of this history. If you were there, if you were in Kiev with as much at stake as the protesters or as citizens who haven't taken a political position, what would you say? You want to be more European or you want to be more Russian?
Well, I think all the people that have been out on the streets for months have been saying we are European. It's not we want to be European. We are European, geographically, historically, culturally. It's just the politics now is in question. And when we say European, let's not forget that Europe today is a democracy, but if we look at the history of Europe, there's all sorts of other ideologies, fascism, Nazism. These sort of ideological clashes are European.
We're talking with Marta Dichok, who's a professor of history and international politics at the University of Western Ontario, author of The Grand Alliance and Ukrainian Refugees. This is The Takeaway. So, Professor, you know, the pop singer Ruslana was talking at the barricades earlier this week. Europe and the world, notice us. Notice Ukraine in the center of Europe. Now, it sounds like she might have misspoke in that she's calling for the people in the center of Europe, say Berlin and Paris, to notice. But for a lot of Ukrainians, Kiev is the center of Europe. Is that true for you?
Well, I would say Kyiv is European. Where the center lies, I think, is not really the point. The point is that Ukrainians who are trying to oppose oppression are appealing to other Europeans and say, help us. There's this video that's just gone viral of a young woman standing in the square saying, you know, please help us.
How are you following things? I can tell that you're very much there on the streets, even though you're, you know, an academic at the University of Western Ontario, and there's a long tradition of Ukrainians in Canada really following very closely the situation in Ukraine. How are you following it?
Well, the wonders of modern technology means that we now can live stream television globally. So I've been watching pretty much day and night what's been happening in the last few months. A number of online TV stations have appeared. Wonderful timing, because now anybody who wants to can watch. And what horrifies me is the perpetrators of violence don't seem to care that they're killing people in front of the world's eyes. This isn't happening somewhere far away. Anybody can watch this. That just is mind-boggling to me, how you can be shooting live ammunition and knowing that the whole world is watching and this is all being recorded, and someday you will be held accountable.
And in a sense, the Ukraine unrest may be a moment where there is less of a concern than there has been in the past that these pictures will call people to be held accountable. You say people are doing this clearly in the light of the Internet day in our 21st century.
But they will be held accountable. That's just it. It's all being recorded. All of the faces, all of the actions. I mean, when this stops, and hopefully it'll stop soon, the peace will come, and let's not forget the Nuremberg trials. I mean, people will eventually be held accountable.
What do you think the end game is here? Do you think peace will come soon? And if so, will Viktor Yanukovych, the president, be responsible for bringing this to an end?
Peace will come. The only question is how quickly and at what cost. I think the president is in an extremely weak position, and he seems to be unable to stop the violence, and that's quite worrying. The fact that he's changing ministers, and yet this is continuing, is quite worrying.
Do the armed forces have an independent constituency here? Do they have the ability to rally the people, as was the case in some other European countries, and if not take power, at least to create a transition?
There's no precedent of military taking over in Ukraine or that part of the world, for that matter. The army has enjoyed high levels of public trust throughout the years of Ukraine's independence. But the question is, who will be the leader? The army is simply an instrument. It's who's giving the orders. And that's the question.
In the violence and the fact that so much of the Ukrainian economy has been affected by the events of the last 2 months, is the opposition, the traditional political opposition, discredited in any sense, or are they likely to emerge stronger from all of this, in your view?
The Ukrainian economy has been under pressure for a while, in some part because Russia has been exercising economic sanctions against Ukraine as it was moving towards the European Union. So the economic problems are longstanding and not caused by this crisis. The crisis has simply intensified them. The opposition is divided, and the protests were started by activists and ordinary people and not the political opposition. And part of the problem is that the only way out of the crisis is through negotiated solution. And the opposition leaders although they're trying, they don't seem to be able to come together and speak with a single voice. Mm. So they have some popular support, but certainly not enough.
Finally, before we go, some have said in the media that Ukraine controls the floodgates of Russian gas going to natural gas going to Western Europe. Would Ukraine play that card? And is that a myth, or would Ukraine actually play that card?
Well, Ukraine, the pipeline that takes Russian natural gas to Europe goes through Ukraine, and that creates a situation of interdependency because Ukraine buys gas from Russia, but for Russia to sell its gas, it goes through Ukraine. So they're interdependent. And when Russia turned off the gas in Ukraine in 2005 after Viktor Yushchenko came to power in the wake of the Orange Revolution, Russia did actually turn off the gas. And then Ukraine simply said, okay, well, if you turn off our gas, we're going to turn off the gas to Western Europe. And the standoff ended very quickly.
But high stakes here in this conflict.
Extremely high.
Marta Tichok, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Marta Tichok is a professor of history and international politics at the University of Western Ontario, author of The Grand Alliance and Ukrainian Refugees.